Hudson. Welcome to Employee Forum. Today we're at Digital Semiconductor in Hudson, Massachusetts. Digital Semiconductor designs, manufactures, markets, and sells Digital's family of Alpha chips. This short clip explains a little more about Digital Semiconductor and the Hudson facility.
Digital Semiconductor, headquartered in Hudson, Massachusetts, designs, manufactures, and markets industry-leading semiconductor products. The Alpha family of high-performance microprocessors has played a key role in digital success in the server and desktop markets. Digital Semiconductor also produces PCI peripheral chips for networking, bridging, and multimedia, and a new line of low-power, high-performance strong-arm microprocessors for use in consumer electronics products.
Digital Semiconductor has been making chips for a number of years, over 10 years, but it wasn't until 1992 that we started to sell chips on the open market. In 1993, Digital Semiconductor became a business unit of the corporation, and now we are charged with profit and loss responsibility.
Certainly not everything is located here on site, but we do have design centers also in Jerusalem and in Palo Alto, California, and down in Austin, Texas.
We have lots of feet out on the street selling Digital Semiconductor products. We have over 40 manufacturers, rep firms, and distributors selling Digital Semiconductor products.
Designing Alpha chips is a constant quest to get small.
If you blew the chip up to the size of a city, we're designing every street, every traffic light, which streets go one way, which streets go the other way, in such a way that when you just give a parameter, say go, that it all just works. The transistor is basically, in simple terms, just a switch. It's just amazing with something so simple that we can make such complicated circuits.
It's difficult to believe that there can be as many as 9 million transistors on a device the size of my thumbnail. And when was the last time you counted a million of anything?
On this wafer, each of these is an individual chip. They're manufactured all at one time. The geometries here is 0.35 micron, 0.35 micron being, I guess, even less than 1/200th of a human hair. This is the chip that broke the barrier of 1 billion instructions per second, which is mind-boggling when you think of it, that so much work could be done in 1 second. But this is the chip that did it. The contrast I want to point out is we took this design and moved it from our Fab 4, a 0.5 micron process, to our Fab 6, a 0.35 micron process. But you also notice the chip is smaller, because going from 0.5 to 0.35, we could pack things in much tighter together. And the big benefit to that is that the chips are therefore running that much faster. So where, for example, this chip is running at approximately 300 megahertz, this one could be running at over 400 megahertz.
Photolithography basically defines a pattern on the silicon. So the speed of these microprocessors is really based on or predicated upon what we can print in photo for line widths.
Because photolithography is a photographic process, it requires special yellow lighting. Fab 6, which came online in January, is one of the most advanced chip fabrication facilities in the world. The $450 million investment in Fab 6 is complete, and the fab will take Digital's next generation of products into the 21st century.
For the next generation Alpha chips, we would need a new facility. We just didn't have the cleanliness levels in the existing fabs, either 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 at the time, to be able to manufacture the complexities and the small geometries that would be inherent in CMOS 6, 7, and 8. One of the things that we are all proud of is the fact that we brought it in on time and at budget.
The overall building itself is more of a machine than it is a building.
Fab 6's clean room has been built to a subclass 1 specification, meaning there is one particle smaller than 0.12 microns in a cubic foot of air. Compare that to the average office environment, which has 2 to 3 million particles per cubic foot. Gases and chemicals used in manufacturing are cleaned to the parts per billion, and in some cases, parts per trillion range. Again, state-of-the-art cleanliness. The fab's state-of-the-art deionized water system cleans over 500,000 gallons of town water daily to the same level as the gases and chemicals. When the water is returned to the town, it's cleaner than when it was brought in.
In the manufacture of semiconductors, we have to make sure the control systems are pretty strict and in place. We exhaust all the chemical baths. We have all sorts of engineering controls.
If you consider a fab is like an onion and the inner core is the cleanest, the next level out we have as the next level of cleanliness. Now, the cleanliness level in those, the next outer layer, is as clean as what our last fab was. The next corridor out from Fab 6 from that is the perimeter corridor. And within the whole overall envelope of Fab 6 is a class 10,000. And again, that's 10,000 particles in 1 cubic foot of half micron.
Once you enter the fab, you enter a world of clean protocol that takes every possibility for minuscule debris into account. Building suits and bunny suits must be worn.
The temperature within our photo area in the fab itself is held to a plus or minus a tenth of a degree. Relative humidity is kept to plus or minus of a half a percent. Those are extremely tight.
The facility's monitoring system, built on an alpha platform, monitors all critical systems in the fab. It gives real-time data about building functions in graphical displays, right down to individual air handlers and valves. The heavy equipment which handles all these functions is located in the CUB, or Central Utility Building, to keep vibration off the fab floor. Vibration would set the tight photolithography and processing alignments off. Digital Semiconductor's full line of products reflects its core competencies, high performance, and innovative process technology.
We won Fight Magazine's award for the best technology, and that was for FX32, translation and emulation software that allows x86 Windows and Windows NT 32-bit applications to run on Alpha. Today, over 1,000 applications run on Alpha, but with FX32, that opens up a whole new opportunity for us. The TV show Space Above and Beyond, the animation for that is done with Alpha systems. Also, Mission Control at NASA uses Alpha systems in the space program.
We also have a graphics and multimedia product line, and they just announced a new video codec, the 21230. Which we have very high hopes for, and of course, StrongArm, which is perfect for those performance-hungry applications that need to live in a low-power type of environment, like a personal digital assistant.
We were looking at creating chips that would go into business types of systems, and now we're into the consumer electronics market.
We make the PCI networking devices, and actually 70% of the network cards that operate and using the PCI bus have digital semiconductor products in them.
And our PCI to PCI bridge chips, those are already the technology leader. 5 of the top 10 PC vendors are using our PCI to PCI bridge chips in their products.
Digital Semiconductor is an excellent example of digital using its strengths to competitive advantage. Through Alpha's industry-leading performance, through new alpha translation and emulation technology, Digital FX32, that will allow x86 Windows and Windows NT 32-bit applications to run transparently in alpha systems running Windows NT. Through StrongArm, a new low-power chip that delivers supercomputer performance priced for the consumer electronics market. Through a portfolio of PCI peripheral chips, including networking, bridge, and graphics and multimedia.
We have a really experienced workforce here. We've got people who've been at Digital longer than I have, people who've been here in this company doing this kind of work for a dozen years.
The speed and power of the chips definitely impress me. We're really at the cutting edge of technology here in Hudson.
Alpha is the fastest accepted new technology. Alpha has contributed $7 billion to Digital's revenue since it was introduced.
We're always, you know, going on to the next technology, and it's better and faster.
Today in Hudson, Robert Palmer, Digital's chairman, president, and chief executive officer, is delivering remarks and taking questions from the people who work here at Digital Semiconductor.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure for me to be with you this morning. I think many of you know that I began my career at Digital here in this facility. And actually, I've been here 10 years now, and I spent about half of it in Digital Semiconductor. And I think it's widely known that I'm extremely proud of this organization and what you've accomplished. I'll say more about that in my prepared remarks, and certainly in question and answer time. What I'd like to talk about this morning, so far as the formal part is concerned, is give you a perspective of where I think we are in digital's transformation. Talk about what we need to do to sustain it, because we've certainly made a lot of progress with your help. And we'll talk about what we need to do to keep that going, and then to answer any questions that you might have about anything I say this morning, or anything that you're just curious about, on which you think I might have some insight or perspective that you'd like to know about. Now, the first slide here is an attempt to sort of depict what our objectives have been over this time period and where we're going. And it talks about at least three basic phases in the transformation of the company. The first was the most painful phase, which was the economic imperative, really, of getting our costs in line with our revenues so we could avoid going out of business, which is what many analysts were saying was a likely outcome for our company in 1992. And you know, we'd suffered $3.9 billion worth of losses up to that point, and we had the wrong business model for the 1990s. So that first arrow there depicts the financial turnaround. Get your costs in line with your revenues, maintain your revenues, and rebuild some confidence in the customer base and in your partner base. So we've done a lot of that, largely accomplished that objective. There's more to do in order to be really competitive in terms of profitability, but largely accomplished that objective. At the same time, we had to begin to start addressing a new strategy because, as I mentioned, the business model we were utilizing, which led to those losses, was inappropriate for the 1990s. It was a good business model for the 70s and part of the 80s, but it's what led to our difficulties in that the 1990s are a very different industry. And so we begin to define a strategy that makes sense for this company with our core competencies and one that would let us grow in the future to be a real leadership in technology and servicing our customers on a worldwide basis. And that was really culminated in a presentation that senior management made to financial and industry analysts last September. If you go back and look at a chart, what you'll see is that starting with that analyst meeting, and of course, bolstered by continued financial performance, the stock has been moving steadily up from 40 to yesterday 74 and 7/8, which is 87.5% higher. Not that I notice that sort of thing or keep up with it. Steady progress. And when compared to how the overall averages, the Dow, of course, has been moving up as well, far greater performance than in the Dow during that period of time. So more than the current financials would justify, by the way. So it's saying that the analysts and the people that vote with their money think this turnaround is turning now into a story about growth, which is what that third arrow is about. It's saying it's okay, we've got a financial turnaround that looks like it's sound. We have a strategy that should enable the company to grow profitably in the future. And that's critically important for all of us. And the fact that they now see that coming is what we're talking about. The issue is we need to gain market share, and we need to achieve competitive levels of profitability to keep this thing going. This next chart shows the financial performance on a quarterly basis without extraordinary items, just the operating results, profit after tax, starting with our disastrous third quarter of 1994, where we lost $183.3 million and led to the complete restructuring of the business, the elimination of the large functions of engineering, manufacturing, sales, and marketing, and the creation of our business unit structure. And it's interesting to notice that almost immediately we begin to see improved financial performance as indicated on this slide. And you can see that for the last five quarters, we've remained profitable. You may recall we set an objective to achieve profitability at the end of the calendar year 1994, Everybody worked very, very hard in digital on a worldwide basis to bring that about. At the time we set that objective, we just had that $183 million loss, and people thought there was virtually no chance of achieving the objective. But we did, and we didn't slip back. Each quarter, we've managed to maintain profitability. You see a seasonal pattern there, going from Q4 to Q1 of our fiscal years, and that will continue in subsequent quarters. But what you see is five quarters of profitability. The last quarter, more than was anticipated in terms of the analysts, the people that follow us, and seven quarters of improvement in our financial performance. Still not at competitive levels relative to the leaders in the industry, but doing very, very well. This next slide talks about product revenue growth and what's fueling that return to profitability. And what you see from the slide is that for many, many quarters, it could go back further and you'd see roughly the same picture. On a year-over-year basis, our product revenues were declining. Customers were not buying more digital product in a given quarter than they bought the same quarter the previous year. And that's a very sad situation in terms of your long-term health. Now, what you can see, though, is after the implementation of the business unit structure, and almost immediately, we begin to see a change in the slope of that line from a very negative situation to a positive situation. And you can see that, allowing for divestments, product revenues grew by 30% year over year. And that's what fueled all the excitement so far as the stock market was concerned. It said, gee, digital not only has turned around financially, but looks like they've got a strategy and it's resulting in growth, and that's a very good picture for our company. This next slide talks about the elements of that growth among a number of different characteristics or business segments, you might say. And as you'll see there, semiconductor operations in the external marketplace grew by over 40%. Slide says 42% growth in revenue year over year. Of course, we've only recently been in the external market. We're making great progress there as a semiconductor supplier to the external market, although the primary goal, of course, is to support digital's products for our customers. And you see on this slide a number of other charts, or another, a number of other performances that, let me just refer to the hardware here and say, well, PCs more than 40%. I think the PC market during the quarter grew about 15-20%, so growing at twice the rate of the market, gaining share. Our Alpha products up 50%, actually it was more than 50%. Unix systems up 65% year over year. Windows NT was up more than 100%, although the chart says 100, but it's from a relatively small base, but clearly growing rapidly. Our network products, 34% growth, and actually right now the growth is greater than that, and we're somewhat constrained by not having forecasted so much demand for our Envision networking products, so that's a really good news for us. Our storage products, 60% growth in the external marketplace. RAID storage from Digital Storage Works has won any number of awards and continues to win awards for its innovation and what it brings to the customers. Multi-vendor services, that part of our multi-vendor customer services that's truly multi-vendor, growing at more than 20% off a pretty large base now. So things are looking good in terms of the different elements of growth. Not everything, of course, in the company is growing, but these are some of the major areas. People are beginning to write very differently about us than they were writing 3 or 4 years ago. Most recently in Fortune magazine here in the United States, the March 4th issue, they every year have an issue where they talk about the most widely admired companies. And this is largely the voters are industry people, CEOs of various companies. Our competitors vote. I vote. And it's a blind thing, and they total it all up. The important thing here is that of all of the 417 companies in the survey, large companies, digital was the most improved on a year-over-year basis. So we have a lot to be proud of in terms of our messages getting out there. We're starting to see some financial performance. People understand the strategy, and it's reflected in the votes of people that are keeping up with the industry in terms of digital's perception. But we have a long way to go to achieve the levels we once had on this list. Your ranking on this list is strongly a function of your financial performance, but there are other factors. I said I'd like to talk a little bit about our corporate strategy in terms of just a brief overview. You know, one of the analysts was saying that we are competing in horizontal businesses. What we mean by that is that we're not trying to do everything that you can do in the vertically integrated computer model as we once were trying to do. We picked on four segments, really, horizontal segments of the industry where we intend to be competitive and really hope to achieve a leadership position. And starting with components, of which this organization is a part, but there are all kinds of components, networking components, storage components, components and peripherals, organization, printers, things of that nature, integrated circuits, components that we deliver largely through indirect channels and partner organizations. So you can think about this chart is that many of the horizontal layers do go through partners, and that's a very important part of our strategy. We talk about customers, we also mean partners. That is, the distributors, the value-added resellers, independent software vendors that are partners to digital. Systems platforms, of which we have really two primary architectures, the Intel architecture and the Alpha architecture, and the operating systems that go on those architectures, OpenVMS, Unix, and Windows NT, that provide digital really with a wider capability in terms of system platforms than any of our competition in terms of performance and functionality. There's a new item on the list that was new at least in September, which has to do with connectivity software. It talks about software for connecting different operating systems and environments within an enterprise or intra-enterprise connectivity, and also connectivity between enterprises using such things as the internet, the World Wide Web, and we have a leadership position in some of the emerging internet software. We've created a software business unit, connectivity software business unit headed by Eileen Lang, reporting directly to me, to make sure that we innovate and distribute software through channels appropriate to software, which is new for digital. And this business just getting off the ground, already we have some impressive accomplishments there. And of course, underlying all of it, and really the thing that ties most of digital together in the customer's mind, is digital's client server services, including all kinds of systems integration services, network integration services, and multi-vendor customer support services that we provide through more than 22,000 employees worldwide, and very few companies can match that capability. Now, in addition to those things, we have to add value vertically. And we have, with our SI organization, a few industries, a few vertical capabilities that we're focused on as well. In addition to that, we deliver vertical solutions with our partners, the consulting firms around the world that are leaders in their space and their expertise, and we partner with those so that we can deliver this value. And then finally, if you think about it overall, we're focused broadly on three areas for growth. The high-performance 64-bit computing, which today means Unix, where digital has a commanding lead, particularly in very large memory databases, Windows NT across the enterprise, the fact that digital is the unique partner really with Microsoft to enable customers to move from the desktop throughout the enterprise over time with a Windows NT environment. So that's a major area. And then the connectivity within and between enterprises that I mentioned. If you looked at the strategy that we have competitors that have similar strategies. We have competitors that are trying to do the same thing, some trying to do more, some trying to do less. In our case, we have a significant differentiator in Alpha and the fact that we innovated the first 64-bit microprocessor here and introduced it to the world, as I recall, Rich, is February 10th of 1992. And it is quite remarkable, unprecedented, that we have continued to maintain a leadership position in performance with that architecture, several different chips now, for 4 years. It's never been done before in semiconductor industry, to my knowledge, in any particular class, whether memory class or microprocessor or whatever. And if you had taken a bet on that, what do you think the probability would be of a small captive semiconductor organization, first of all, being first to market? Think about the giants in semiconductor technology in the United States, in Europe, and in Japan, in Korea, in Taiwan, that you'd be the first out there and that you would be able to sustain that performance advantage. The probability of that is vanishingly small. And at the time, back in 1990s, when we had made that assertion that we intended to do some of those things, absolutely nobody would have taken the bet that you'd be successful. You have been successful, and much of digital success as a result of that, and the result of our systems engineering organizations and software organizations that could take advantage of the microprocessor technology to build balanced systems. Because what we sell are balanced systems, and a balanced system is just what it sounds like. It's not only the engine, but it's the transmission. It's not only the engine, it's the I.O. It's the overall architecture, and it's the software that enables it to be successful. That being said, we are the absolute hands-down leader in servers using 64-bit technology, 64-bit Unix, and exploiting very large memory databases. And we have an opportunity to really grow our lead over the next year, year and a half. Now, in terms of total Alpha revenues, totally new architecture introduced 4 years ago, we're now at over $7.5 billion in cumulative revenue of Alpha products and related services. And most of our competitors have yet to ship their first 64-bit systems. Some are now shipping 64-bit microprocessors, but few have a 64-bit operating system. In fact, I think the only generally commercial available 64-bit operating system other than Digital's today really is Silicon Graphics, and that's not been out there that long. So there'll be more. They're coming. Hewlett-Packard and Sun Microsystems expect to have competitive 64-bit operating systems in late 97 or 98. We have a tremendous opportunity to exploit the leadership that we have in this space. Our reason for existence in this organization is to make sure that we stay ahead in microprocessor technology, and therefore our systems stay ahead of our competitors, and that lets us differentiate ourselves from our competitors. We have a lot to be proud of. We've got some competitors coming with new products this year. Be interesting to see. But other than a week or two, I doubt that any competitor will be ahead of us if we keep performing as you have been. That's why I talked about this very large memory technology and what it's been made possible because of the microprocessor technology that you've developed here and the systems engineering and the software engineering. I mean, an incredible job has also been done by systems engineering and software when you think about it. We started fresh designing a new operating system, Unix, a new implementation, 64 bits from the get-go, not some 32-bit thing that was stretched to fit, which is what most of our competitors are doing. Started with a fresh sheet of paper, if you will, and engineered over a period of 3 or 4 years the leading implementation of Unix today. D.H. Brown just recently published an article where they compared again all of the various Unixes of any market share whatsoever. And said Digital led in 7 out of 9 categories in terms of our implementation. And it's the microprocessor, the operating system, and the overall balanced system design that let us take advantage of this capability so that now, this chart shows, we've set new benchmarks of a popular metric called TPMC, transactions per minute, according to the C, the Council on Computing. It's an industry standard generally accepted as objective way of comparing different engines, different systems. Digital has set the benchmarks at approximately twice the performance of our next closest competitor at less cost for our customers. And we're winning a lot of business because of that. And because of that, Oracle, Sybase, Informix, Software AG, and virtually every important database company is moving their database to our platform to take advantage of its performance. And then the applications that ride on that database are also porting to Alpha and those databases to take advantage of that performance. And the example shown here is SAP R3, which again set a benchmark appropriate to SAP that was far in excess of any benchmark ever set previously. And these make compelling arguments to the customer of why consider Digital. Because we not only can do today's applications more rapidly at lower cost than any other competitor if they depend on very large memory database, but we also now can enable new applications that previously were either not possible at all or certainly not economic to do. And we're starting to get some of those applications, like I've mentioned, fraud detection in cellular phones, and things where you have to be able to do some very high performance processing very rapidly so as not to annoy the customer, to verify that the person using the phone is the right person and the call is a legitimate call, it's not stolen or something, and it has to happen so fast that the person doesn't know it's happening. As an example. And I said there's another point that's not on the slides that occurred to me actually on the way over here this morning, and that is the intellectual property position that you've built here and that we as a company now enjoy because of all of the patents that have been represented by that wall out there outside of the stairs here in Hudson, of all of the different patents and successes. And as we go forward, this becomes a very important competitive leverage for our company. The fact that we have patent technology on innovative circuit design, process design, software, FX32, those things are valuable to our company when negotiating with our competitors who also have patent portfolios and in terms of just the overall competitiveness. Now, relative to Windows NT, I'm going quickly here, this is a chart that compares Digital's commitment to Windows NT versus that of our competitors. And it's very clear, as you see all of those checks, that we have a total and unique commitment to Windows NT and to helping customers move to the enterprise with that operating system. And what you're seeing is that will enable Digital to protect our VMS customer base, which is critically important, but also the market is moving to Windows NT and to 64 bits, and we are already there to help our customers with those problems. That market is moving toward where we are. So the opportunity for Digital is quite clear. See if we can get the next slide, please. What do people say about that? Again, I'll read what one of the analysts at least summarized by saying, Digital has the leadership position in providing NT-based, high-performance, price-performance platforms for production enterprise applications. Aberdeen, who's the consultant here, does not believe that any other major system supplier will be able to surpass Digital's position within the next several years. I think they're right in terms of our opportunity, but whether or not we can make this a true statement depends on us. We have to execute the strategy that we have. This particular analytical firm, until very recently, was quite negative on our company. Quite negative. This is a tremendous turnaround in their perspective of our company, and it's not unique, but it's a good example. Very well positioned for the future of Windows NT. On internet connectivity software, again, going very quickly, we've innovated some things that have established Digital in the minds of many people as a leadership in internet software and connectivity, and we're going to keep doing it. The most notable of those is our Alta Vista search engine, which is quite impressive. Those of you that have used it, in fact, whenever I go around, I run into customers or analysts or reporters that are using Alta Vista and want to thank us, Digital, for putting it up and making it available because it is a search engine that's over 100 times faster than any other alternative for finding information on the World Wide Web. Today, we have more than 21 million web pages that are indexed, which represents more than 10 billion words. Every word, 10 billion, is indexed, and you can find any topic you're looking for in that 10 billion sea of information by using Alta Vista software running on a large 8400 system. I say large, it's a 10 processors, 6 gigabytes of main memory, and 210 gigabytes of storage from our StorageWorks organization, providing the indexer that continually is indexing web pages and adding to that 10 billion word total. And in addition to that, we're connected to some 13,000 news groups on a real-time basis, so this information is constantly updated. There's no fresher source of information about any topic than Alta Vista. And even the CEO uses it all the time. You know, I have it in my portable high-node computer there, access to the internet, and you can find something there far quicker than I can find anything in any reference book or document that I have. It's amazing. If you haven't tried it and you have an internet connection, you ought to try it. It's really impressive. And the thing that happens is that every customer that uses it, every reporter, every analyst, because it's so much more efficient for them, they also see it's Digital. They see it's 64-bit computing. They see innovative leadership technology, the sort of thing that they thought we had lost, but now they're seeing that, no, we have it. We have it in semiconductors, we have it in software, and we have it in internet technology. And that's just one example. The others on this chart have to do with security firewalls, tunneling software, collaboration software, and things that we are working together with partners in this area worldwide and establishing distribution channels and partners for such products. It's a very exciting opportunity for future growth. Internet needs, in order to make it useful, speed, huge memory addressability, and affordability, and that's what is so compelling about the alpha platforms and the technology that we have. In fact, one of the competing web searches or information indexers is Lycos, and they recently switched from Sun Microsystems to Digital, even though Sun offered to provide additional servers to them for free. It wasn't the cost of the thing, it didn't have the performance. They switched over to Digital Alpha servers, and as a matter of fact, every time somebody accesses Lycos, which I'm told is about 50 million hits a month, they see powered by Digital Alpha servers on that web page that they hit, which is tremendous advertising for our company. Can I have the next slide? Thank you. So going forward, what do we need to focus on? Clearly, we have to keep doing all the things we've been doing. We have to keep innovating in hardware and software and systems and semiconductors. We have to keep executing, driving our costs down, being more efficient. We have to do all of those things. And we need to focus more, although we've been doing better, we need to focus more on customer satisfaction. Ultimately, all of our jobs, all of our security, all of our future benefits, all of the rewards of being in business depend on customer satisfaction. How well do we satisfy our customers? And when I say customers, I also mean our partners, our software partners, our channel partners worldwide. How well do we satisfy their needs as compared to our competitors, of which there are many? No one has to buy from Digital. They don't have to buy from us. We have to earn their confidence by meeting their expectations and indeed exceeding their expectations, offering more value. That's the way it is in business. That's the way it is for us. And really, that's all we should require, is the opportunity to compete. We have the talent necessary to win, and we are winning where in the past we had been losing. In order to achieve customer satisfaction, all the employees of the enterprise worldwide have got to be engaged. And by engaged, I mean they have to understand what the company strategy is. What is the value proposition that we are making to our customers? What is it that each of us in our particular role needs to do in order to help our customers, in order to achieve customer satisfaction? Whether it's in your job description or not, if you have the opportunity to do something to help the customer, you should do it. That's what we should do. Stay focused on our customers, just as we as individuals really appreciate it as consumers when somebody that we're dealing with treats us exceptionally well, meets our expectations, we keep giving them our business. It's exactly the same with our customers. In order to achieve that superior level of satisfaction, every employee worldwide has to understand what their contribution can be, why they need to do their job as carefully and as efficiently as possible, why they need to look around and see are there ways to do it better and suggest ways to improve. This is an ongoing, never-ending, dynamic process. And if we do those things, we clearly will reward our shareholders, we'll have access to capital, and we'll keep growing. We have a clear strategy to grow this business, and we're starting to see some growth. You know, the quarter just ended, we had 14% revenue growth year over year, and in absolute terms, it was the most revenue of any quarter in Digital's history. So clearly we're starting to see growth. As I've been talking about this morning, we have in some areas absolute industry leadership in products and services. We've got to build on that leadership and not lose it, and we'll create new areas of leadership that I've talked about in internet software, strong arm, just as a couple of examples. We have strategic alliances with best-in-class companies. We are attractive to other companies for the first time in a very long time. The alliance with Oracle, with Microsoft, with our partners, SAP, SAS, Software AG, Informix, Sybase, many others. We are attractive for the first time in a very long time, and no company, none of our competitors, and not Digital, can do it all by ourselves. That partnership, that new model that's required by the paradigm of the 90s, depends on partners and on working successfully with them. And again, they don't have to work with us. We have to offer them a better value proposition for their business. And we have our commitment to these customers and partners, and we're working on the employee engagement. This employee engagement is a long-term deal. It's not a short-term thing. It's not something that I expect to give some speech and immediately we have it. It's something that I can't provide, actually, and no one in management can actually provide. It's something that we, together, as employees of digital, need to work together to create. To create an environment where everyone has the opportunity to achieve his or her potential, to be able to work as hard as they want to, and to be successful. That's the environment that we hope to create working together.
Good morning, my name is Jeff Maggard. You said so yourself, we've been fantastically successful being a small captive semiconductor facility at building, delivering, and sustaining alpha performance. Frankly, we've stunned the competition. We really have. And they have reacted strongly. Intel has accelerated the rate in investment in people and technology. They've delivered P6 that beats us on the NT desktop. If you look at SysMark NT benchmark data, they're better than we are, 20% better than our best system, and their systems cost less. The reason for Alpha's initial success was heavy investment in people and technology right here in this room. The investments in people here is now not competitive. We lose people every week for 30% higher pay, better benefits, stock options, and so on. We've lost senior EV6 architects, senior designers. We lose process people in key areas all the time. My question is, what are you going to do to fix this problem?
I think it's a very reasonable question. I agree with most of your observations as well. And I think that that would fall into that category of the embarrassing and difficult questions. So thank you. That's a real question, as a real answer is needed. And what we have to do is, as we have returned to profitability, we have to selectively address those issues. And that leads to distortions in the compensation. I can say that on the architects that you mentioned, that we've lost a couple of very key people that would like to get back. I hope semiconductor management will call these folks and say, gee, how do you like it at your new company? Maybe you'd like to come back, as Rich Wittig did to digital after he left our company, went to Apple, came back, and is one of the lead designers of the strong arm. We have an environment that doesn't pay the highest because we can't afford it in any job. Not any job do we pay the highest. It doesn't have the best benefits in any particular position against the absolute leaders. And the reason is because we had gone through this very, very difficult time and huge losses, and we have to earn those back. And my model is that as we become more profitable, and my board supports this, as we become more profitable, we can share that profitability with employees on a worldwide basis. For those of you in the United States, you know that we, for the first time, implemented this 401k program. We're revising our retirement program. We've authorized some limited raises throughout the world as appropriate relative to the markets that we compete in. And it's not enough. Couldn't agree more, not enough. Because we are so good in some of the things that we do, not only in semiconductor, although that was about the question, but also in software, in systems, and services, that we do lose key employees. And I think that will always be the case. You'll always lose some because a competitor has targeted you and said, gee, I can offer more. There are people in this room, many, who have been offered more. More stock, more salary, more opportunities, benefits, or whatever by some competitor that are still here. They're here because they believe in digital, in their colleagues, they like to live here, they want to be part of the team, or for whatever reason, just like I'm here. Every executive, every employee, makes a decision which company to work for. What do you believe in? That's why we're all here, I hope. Specifically, as we have these opportunities, anybody can go and target somebody. We do it ourselves, by the way. If you look at the people we've hired from Hewlett-Packard, you know, we've hired them from IBM. How did we get them? By paying less? Probably not. Probably not. We had to offer more opportunity, more stock than they had, more options, more potential, more responsibility, and more money. And that's the way it goes in industry, and it's an ongoing thing. We've been fortunate somewhat to be out on this coast where there aren't as many competitors, and those of you that like living in the Northeast, makes it a little more difficult to move to some of the other areas where this is a common day-to-day occurrence. I mean, people move from one parking lot to the other routinely. We've got a little bit better situation here. As we make more profit, we will increase the benefits, we will increase the salaries, and it'll be driven by market forces. That is, different skills are more in demand, you gotta pay more. That's the only thing you can do. And today we are making some of those very selective adjustments in this organization and in other organizations in the world. But if you thought about, well, could we do something very general? I mean, isn't it possible to have a 20 or 30% raise for everybody? It'd be nice, but the math won't work. The math just doesn't work. 61,000 employees, you start spreading that large a number over a modest increase, wipes out all the profit the company has. So we haven't yet earned enough profit. We're not yet efficient enough to be able to do that. But our commitment is, what we want to do is to, as we get more profit, to share that with more benefits, more salary, for all employees, not just in semiconductor. All employees worldwide. But again, it'll always be the case, at least in my view, that there will be some functions that are more in demand and therefore will have more salary, better benefits than other functions and other talents. That's the way capitalism works. And we will never reach a position where we are so, never, where we pay so much and we have such a good environment that we don't lose any talent. One of the things I'm most proud about, by the way, as we talk about that topic, again, is the talent that we have. And one offset to your question is, in addition to paying competitively and moving as quickly as we can to better benefits, we also have to attract new talent all the time. New talent all the time. So even though you may see that we have 61,000 employees today and we had 61,000 something the quarter ended previously, they're not the same employees. Some employees have left, new employees have been hired, and this will be going on forever. We'll always be recruiting new talent out of the colleges and universities, new talent from our competitors, and we'll be losing some talent to our competitors. That's the nature of the business, but it is a very serious question, and the answer is, yes, we're going to address it. We're addressing it somewhat now as we can afford to, and we'll continue to do that. We have already begun to make better benefits for our employees worldwide. It's different in every geography. We have to be competitive in every geography worldwide, and as you know, two-thirds of our business is outside this country. So, complicated problem. Management understands it. It's a very valid concern, and we need to hang on to our best talent. To our best talent, we sometimes have to pay more. This creates distortions within the groups, and it is inevitable. But that's reality.
Morning, Mr. Palmer. My name is John Spatafore. I work for the CAD Group. My question to you this morning is, now that Digital has split into individual business groups, business units, and DS is responsible for supporting itself in its own revenue, did the failing business agreement with Cirrus impact DS in revenue? And the next part of the question is also, is Digital talking with and close to closing a deal with any other companies? Thank you.
Question, for those of you that maybe didn't hear it, has to do with the Cirrus Logic agreement that really fell through because of their deteriorating financial outlook. And is that going to impact Digital Semiconductor revenue and profitability? And the answer is yes. It will impact it unless we find some other alternative. It won't impact it in the near term. It's a couple of years out was when that would have really made a difference. And I'm disappointed, and I feel badly for Cirrus, that their business situation deteriorated so quickly. But that is the nature of business, in particular semiconductors and computers. You can get in trouble in a hurry, and getting out of trouble is not so easy. They've gotten in trouble, and therefore it's not appropriate that we go forward with that company to buy additional headaches for ourselves. The other part of the question was, are we talking to anyone else? The answer to that is yes. We typically don't make announcements unless we've completed something and we have the other company's permission, but we are actively discussing with other companies the possible utilization or partnership of our technologies. You may have noticed, as a matter of fact, that Ed Caldwell is not here this morning. He's not ill. He's engaged in some of these discussions. And so that's he's not here physically. And so it's very active. We have an excellent asset here, tremendous technology and talent, and I think that we need to find an appropriate partner to help us utilize this capability if we can. But if we don't, we are nonetheless committed. I want you to hear this very carefully. Whether or not we do, we are nonetheless committed to maintaining our investment in semiconductor technology so long as it differentiates our position. One of the observations in the other question had to do with the fact that Windows NT running on the Pentium Pro outperforms, at least on a benchmark, the applications or outperforms Alpha, any processor we have. And this is accurate, although Intel had to come back and point out that there was a flaw in their benchmark of about, it seems like to me, 20% or so on the performance, which changed that outcome. But the reason is because that architecture was highly tuned for that, software was highly tuned for that particular architecture. We have to keep working so that those applications run as well on our architecture, and they don't at this moment, even though they run better on ours than anyone else's. Now, I do want to come back to that while I'm thinking about it. Our products that use any Intel architecture also provide that capability, right? We are a two-platform company as far as architecture. And I want to make a point here that is sometimes misunderstood, very easily to misunderstand it. I do not view, you may view, but I do not view Alpha as a competitor to Intel. That may be some shock to you. I don't view it as a competitor. I view it as a complementary to Intel, so that our product line goes from the least expensive Intel processors to their most expensive and beyond to the highest performance Alpha processors, which are uniquely qualified to provide 64-bit computing, but also which will run Windows NT with enterprise-level reliability and robustness and scalability that today is not available. We will be an early adopter of every Intel implementation in our systems groups because we need to. We need to provide that to our customers. A way of thinking about this, I mean, one analogy might be the car companies. If you think about a car company, let's say BMW, BMW has excellence in engineering in their product. They have, as a matter of fact, they offer products that use four-cylinder engines, six-cylinder, eight-cylinder, and 12-cylinder engines at different price points with different performance. BMW management or employees do not consider their 12-cylinder engine as great competition for their six-cylinder engines. They have different purposes, different cost points, different performance levels. You sell fewer 12 cylinders, by the way, and they cost more. But they offer all of those. It's complementary. However, if you compare the horsepower of a 6-cylinder and 12-cylinder, it's pretty obvious that the 12 cylinders provide more horsepower, more torque. So in that regard, it seems like they're competing. Since Intel is the standard architecture worldwide, and all of the benchmarks at one way or another are going to address the Intel architecture, we inevitably are going to be compared to Intel in terms of performance. Our 12-cylinder engine is inevitably going to be compared to their 4s, 6s, and 8s. Now the issue is, are they going to have a 12? If you want to think about it that way. They got 4s, 6s, and 8s. Are they going to have a 12 that not only runs this particular benchmark better, but the applications, and that someday gets the 64-bit? And let's be really clear, that is their intention. Absolutely their intention. And they're working on that with one of our competitors, Hewlett-Packard, and they've called it the P7, which originally stood for Pray for 97, which now has to be called the P8 because it's Pray for 98. But whether it's 98 or 99 or 2000, I'm sure as I'm standing here, it's going to show up. You better be sure it's going to show up. It's going to show up. And when it shows up, we need to have something out there, and we have plans to do so that are substantially higher performance on both Windows NT and Unix. And that's the importance, again, of innovative circuit design, process technology, FX32 translator technology, systems design, software. Nothing's easy. You got to be excellent in all of that and a whole bunch of things I didn't mention if you want to compete. This is the NFL. You want to play in the big leagues, you got to compete across the board, and you've got to be excellent. And in many cases, we are. And for 4 years, we've had the lead. I'm confident you can keep it up. But you got to work hard. The other guy's working hard, and they're outspending us. So that's an interesting dynamic. And it's fun, actually. Competition is fun. If you don't like a competitive industry, for gosh sakes, you shouldn't be in this one. Ted?
On delivering the Alpha performance, which you've indicated is a key part of our strategy, and when that would come in conflict with DS profitability as a merchant market.
Well, the most important thing is delivering that profitability, and that conflict has to be managed because everything you do in life, like I was just describing, is complicated. It's not so easy. We can't say that we're only going to do the highest performance Alpha processors. and do nothing else, or we can't achieve that other objective, which is lower overall manufacturing costs for all of our products. Also, there are many opportunities for us to apply our skills and intellectual property to new architectures like strong arm, to PCI bridge-to-bridge connectors and things that we're leading in, to a variety of networking components that also support our network products group. In fact, one of the most important that you're working on right now, frankly, most important to digital, most important to our profitability in a few months, is to replace some older chip designs that we no longer manufacture and don't have any die bank left on that support our GigaSwitch FDDI switch. This GigaSwitch is sold out. Tremendous product. FDDI, we're the absolute leader. Sold out, 4-month delivery. You know, could sell a lot more if I had them. In several months, we're going to run out of chips, period. You are implementing, for probably CMOS 5, although I'm not sure, probably CMOS 5, a fix to that problem, an upgrade, a new chip, new set, that will provide the functionality. You'd say, gee, why didn't you make more of them? Well, that's amusing. We said, okay, Network Products, by the way, is very satisfied with your performance. I talked to Larry Walker yesterday. He said, we told them, build this many, because we thought we needed that many. Market demand was that many, which is good news for the product group, but now we're out of chips. So that's a very important thing. We got to get those. We got customers that need those GigaSwitches, and we need the profit. So we got to get those. So it's a balancing act. But the number one, and the reason it was first on my chart, number one charter issue is leadership in alpha technology.
Hi, Bob. I'm Jim Marine. Over the last couple of years, we've been selling off pieces of our business because maybe we don't want to be in that, or and so forth. In our future, near or distant future, are we looking at growth through acquiring other companies?